I'm Christopher Lydon in Cape Coast, toward the western end of Ghana's Atlantic shore. It's a university town. It's a major fishing center in West Africa. It's the spot where the American First Lady Michelle Obama traces her ancestors. But historically, what most haunts the world eternally about Cape Coast and its castle is that this is the point where millions of Africans were stockpiled and then shipped in the infamous Middle Passage to slavery in the new worlds of North and South America. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, a global conversation with American attitude, we'll call it this time. I'm picking up the thread of a conversation that began most of 10 years ago with the poet and teacher Kwadwo Opoku Ajimang at the University of Cape Coast. Kwadwo, your voice is for me one of the beautiful, deep songs of Ghana. We're overdue on Open Source for an African angle, for your angle on what Ghana is going through, what we're all going through in the economic crisis, in the soccer boom, with your own new president, and in this global age of Obama. What are the things, in your view, that we simply must talk about?
Well, first things first. Yesterday, Ghana beat Nigeria, and so we have reason to celebrate.
In the year of a World Cup still to come.
That's right. Ghana and Nigeria, over the years, the record is even. And yesterday, we tilted it in our favor by beating them 1-0.
So it's Egypt and Ghana in the Africa Cup first this year.
That's right.
By way of introduction, Kwadwo Opoku Ajimang is a literature PhD from the University of Toronto. He has taught in Atlanta, Portland, Oregon, and New York, among other places. But it was your poetry, Kwadwo, that grabbed me in Ghana, about Ghana, even before I met you. We're sitting in the shadow, so to speak, of this Cape Coast castle. Mm. Let's begin at the castle. Mm-hmm. The line you wrote that just jumped off the page for me years ago was this one. Slavery is the living wound under the patchwork of scars. Mm. I associate you with the drive in Ghana to talk out the story of the castle. Where to begin?
To talk properly about Cape Coast Castle, we have to begin with the notion of redemption. I think that is where we have to start, because otherwise the history won't make sense. Redemption, because the story of our common humanity must never end with the tragic.
You write particularly about the 18th century slave known as Olaudah Equiano, who bought his freedom and wrote his own autobiography. And yet what we read, say you, is not the full story, only a portion of it. For Equiano's mother came home from the farm one evening to find her only daughter and youngest son stolen, never to be heard from again. We do not know her story. Nobody knows the story of her grief.
It seems to me that Equiano's life story is such a beautiful metaphor in this tragic story. His is one of the few stories, one of the few slave narratives that gives us a complete picture of the history of slavery, because his autobiography tells us about his life as a child before he was taken into slavery. Tells us also about his life in slavery as an enslaved African sailor. And finally, in the third movement, he talks to us about his life after slavery. So from him, we get the story of slavery before, during, and after. There's a certain Aristotelian completeness about that, a beginning, a middle, and an end. But Equiano's story is also important because it alludes to a life in Africa about which we have no record. He left behind him a home, a parent's home, that suffered his kidnapping. But whereas we know Equiano's story, because he left us his autobiography, We know nothing about what happened to his mother when she came back from the farm to find that her son and her daughter have been taken, and she was never to see them again. The story of this little book, Cape Coast Castle, is to try to imagine into place the missing story of the victims of slavery who were left behind. Let me read just this extract from one of the poems in the book. It's called Equinox Retort. The people looked up. The stars were salt. Beneath them, the earth had fled, making no sound. Our earth ascended the horizon. Blood was like ash. They caught the frenzy and opened fire. Blood called as voice and its echo, and nobody heard our dying call. At dawn, the raiders came. The men and women were at the farm. The raiders knocked down the doors. They scattered the ash and the old people. They killed the young in their yoke. They spread anguish on rooftops. And the winds came down from the mountains, dragging along the foul air from the smoking wounds. Everything is present in my memory, even the far future, the buried fury. In silence and alone, fathers swallow their clenched fist. Now they are mute on the road of thorns, and the clouds have eaten the moon. In silence and alone, mothers hear the cries of their stolen children. The castle breathes sweetness. Who will protect you from your history? In whose language will you read to your children the book of conquest? Now, if people died of all the things they remember, we would live forever. This is Equinox Retort, and in it we try to picture what Equinox thinks of the history of the people he left behind.
If people died of all the things they remember, we would live forever.
That's right.
Meaning?
It's a kind of paradox to which everybody brings his or her own meaning as, I don't know.
I take it to mean grammatically that we don't remember anything that threatens us.
Precisely. That we remember what we wish to remember. What we think of as the past is really what we remember of it. And what we remember of it is always shaped by what we need now. In other words, memory is always purposive.
You write endlessly about silence, and you write about the castle as a monument above all to a very present fear. Mm-hmm. You write, the castle is a standing provocation to thought and action. Upon its disarming rests a whole people's freedom. The fact is that the pressures of our societies today, the tributes we pay in blood, colonialism, neocolonialism, even poverty, and the lopsided world order are largely the effects of the slave trade. You wrote this in your book, Cape Coast Castle. Slavery gives the enslaved nothing but a legacy of pain, alienation, fear, and worst of all, a fetish erected around the denial of the fact and lasting effects of enslavement. It is a fetish that allows us to pretend that our world is whole, that we nullify the castle by incorporating and then ignoring it. Mm-hmm. How is to disarm that castle for the Ghanaian survivors of that history?
This is the place where, if we are not careful, we will tell the story of Africa as a story of victimhood, pure and simple. It is the place where, as Chinua Achebe says, the rain began to beat us. But that is only one way of looking at it. We can also imagine into place, if we wish, the story of resistance, the story of survival, the story of triumph of the greatest evil imaginable, the reduction of people into chattel. Mm. And if we are able to tell the story properly, then we must take into account the responsibility to find a balance, not to define the victims only in terms of their weaknesses, but also to measure them by their strength as a way to retrieve their humanity. And it's important in thinking about Cape Coast Castle that we do this, because if the history of slavery is about the denial of a people's humanity, then the proper telling of that story should concern itself with the restoration of that humanity.
Kwadjo, I associate you and this book of yours, Cape Coast Castle, with a change in the way Ghana speaks about the castle and about slave history. I associate it also with a moment in the 90s when Jamaican dancers come to Ghana, refuse to perform at that holding pen of slaves, of their ancestors. Tell us that story.
Okay. The event you are referring to occurred during the first Pan-African Festival of the Arts. And one of the programs in this festival was to hold a music concert in the courtyard of the castle. That evening, the delegation from Jamaica and other places in the Caribbean made the point that they disagreed very strongly with holding a piece of entertainment in a place where their ancestors and ours suffered so much, that it would be a demeaning of their memory to hold such a festival on the back of our ancestors. To their credit, the Ghanaian authorities in charge of the festival had a change of mind. I think this event, this controversy, was a critical point in Ghana's relationship with the African diaspora, because when we think of the history of slavery, we tend to think of it as one history, but in fact there are two. There is the history of those who suffered in the trade, its victims, and there is also the history of those who profited from it, which is to say that on the one hand, there is a lot of guilt emanating from the side who profited from it. And there is also, on the other side, a lot of shame. And Cape Coast Castle has become a contested site in which these two contradictory views are jostling for space.
Even today?
Even today.
How so?
You see, about 15 years ago, Cape Coast Castle and Elmina Castle were renovated. And when we went to find out the finished product, in which these two castles had been converted into modern museums, we discovered that something very thoughtful had been created. It was therefore a very rude surprise to discover that in this same place, in this castle, in which Africans were bought and sold over long periods of time in our history, there was only one mention of the slave trade. And this was a panel close to the beginning at the door. And the panel mentioned something to the effect that the history of Ghana also had to do with the slave trade. But the slave trade brought in its wake certain positive things, such as European education, European Christianity, European judicial system, and so on and so forth. Now we can argue about this forever. But for me, the answer comes back to whose history is being told. Because as I said, there is the history of those who profited from it and the history of those who were its victims. If Ikweno's mother was to tell the story of slavery in the exhibition room, I am sure it would be a different story. There would be more than just a small footnote about her son in the exhibition. Another example is when the renovation occurred, the main male dungeon in Elmina Castle had been converted into a tourist shop. And again, when representations were made, it was changed. And so there is this debate going on constantly. And the point is to keep the machinery going so that the dialogue can be refined to a point where the redemption I mentioned becomes possible. Because this is such a terrible story that we need to keep listening to each other.
What runs through so many of your poems about the castle and around it is simply, it is a living offense, even to the people who are here, who are, like Ekiano's mother, unmemorialized. Their loss has never been told. And there's something about that monument that sits there in its kind of arrogance that survives, that we haven't dealt with yet.
You are very right about that. There's a quotation from an American president in talking about the nature of oppression. He says something that I found to be a very important thought. He said, "We've offended them too much ever to forgive them." There are so many ways to understand this.
Oh, I get it.
But what we have said so far is coming from the victim's side. I think there has to be an equal and opposite surge, you see, from the other side to dissolve Cape Coast Castle as an offense. You see, we have to have dialogue.
I'm not sure it can be dissolved either any more than it can be redeemed. It seems to me, perhaps the only response I can think of is it should be recited as a prayer almost every day. Man, don't forget, this is one of the things you're capable of.
That may be so, but I will disagree. You see, as a Christian, the notion of grace is so important. To be forgiven for what you never thought is possible. I think that goes down to the meaning of our humanity. Life, as we understand it, is always redeemable. That good will always triumph. Otherwise, there is no point. I mean, Cape Coast Castle can be defeated in that way. Perhaps we think it is not possible because we can't imagine the tools to do it yet. But I think it is possible. There is good in all of us.
Forgiveness in Christian terms comes from God, not from us. And it's not for us to forgive ourselves, right?
But we have to learn to forgive ourselves before God can.
We have to know that God loves even people who are capable of horror stories like this, even horrendous horror stories that went on for three centuries and devastated a continent. Yes, that too can be forgiven.
Maybe you are right, because that is why there is hell. But I don't know. I mean, I am of the opinion that however bad it is, it can always be redeemed. Otherwise, there's very little point.
With great pain, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, Kwadwo Opoku Adjumong, in your own life, in your own mind, as a child growing up, when did you learn about slavery and how did you begin to get your marvelous head around it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in a very small town, small village, in fact, in the eastern region of Ghana, called Kwabing. And I lived with my mother's mother, my grandmother. And this old woman, I mean, she had stories for every occasion. Every problem that came up was resolved with a story. One other thing I liked most about her was going to the food farm with her. There's a story she told that gave me my first inkling of the slave experience. I used to go to the farm with her on Saturdays, and I felt the distance was too long. And the most annoying thing about it was that on the way, she would point to the land to the left and to the right and say that all that land belonged to our family. So one evening I asked her, "Nana, if all this land belongs to us, why do we have to go so far away to find food?" And she said, "When you grow up, I will tell you." So by the age of 13, when I entered high school, I felt I was big enough. And one evening I asked her. She then told me a story of her childhood. When she was about my age, living in the small settlement, there would be strange men who would descend on the village and take the people away.
Mm.
This is a woman who grew to be 113.
Mm.
So she's talking about her childhood. They would take the people away, and those who escaped would feel hungry in the evening and return to the settlement in the night. But the raiders will still be waiting to capture them. And so the elders of the town decided to plant their food farms away, as far away from the town as possible, to give those who escaped the chance to survive. In Chi, the term for it is Ephraim, those who got away.
Mm.
Ephraim, and there are stories about that.
And these are memories of slave raiders in your grandmother's lifetime.
That's right. This was, I believe, after the abolition of slavery, but there were still remnants of it.
Well, how did that imprint itself on your whole being?
This was a story she told me when I was 13. I had spent my first term in high school away from home. And I was in school in Cape Coast. The term after that, I visited Cape Coast Castle and discovered the story of slavery from another dimension. And so between my grandmother's story and the building, Cape Coast Castle, you can say that my professional life was formed.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've met other Ghanaians who speak of slavery into the 20th century in their families and of people who came into the family in trade, so to speak, and couldn't talk about it. And yet I sense something has changed in the conversation. What is it that you've found a way to say and helped other Ghanaians to say that forms the current thinking?
I think we have to begin by talking about how the oral tradition has imposed a moratorium on the dialogue about slavery. There are dozens and dozens of proverbs and folk tales and oral traditions generally to dissuade people from investigating slavery and the ancestry of people who may have been sold into slavery. There is an imposition, official imposition of silence almost. Or talk about it has to occur within very strict contexts so that it can be properly controlled. That, I strongly believe, is only one way of looking at it. That to properly heal the community, it should be possible to speak openly and frankly about this history. I think history is, in this sense, should be seen as important only for the lessons it can give us. And the lessons can be known only if we are able to speak openly about it. Mm. Yeah.
Is that inhibition about who did what to whom and the fact that, of course, these raiders, a great many of them were black men, is it about the depths of the evil itself? Is it about the humiliation of having been enslaved, the guilt of having been part of that system? I mean, where do you begin taking it apart?
I think we ought to start with a certain understanding. There's been this very long debate about the triangular slave trade. But a triangle is a mathematical abstraction. And so a lot of the story of slavery has to do with abstractions, with the ultimate dehumanization of the captives. And so in all of these stories, they remain faceless. But if we are truly concerned with finding out the lessons of this experience, then it's important to people the spaces properly with living and breathing people whose stories need to be told. That, for me, is the most important lesson.
You sound like a man who's writing that story.
I've been working forever on a novel. I'm not sure if I ever can finish it.
You know, I'm fascinated by Ghana's place in the global conversation. As you've said, there is no place else on Earth like Cape Coast Castle as the beginning of reflection and conversation and action, too. There's so many other things to talk about, too, though. Let's take a break and maybe pick up the conversation at the Opoku Ajumang village.
Okay, we'll do that. But let me end this section with this. There is a tradition in this town of Cape Coast. It's a local tradition, a very old one, which I suspect dates back to the period of the slave trade. When you visit a Ghanaian home, the tradition is for the host to offer you water as a sign of welcome. We do that every day. And it's accepted as the way of welcoming the visitor into the home. But if you visit a truly traditional Cape Coast home, even before they offer you water, there is a short conversation they hold with you, which is dying out now because the people who do that are now dying off. But when you enter a Cape Coast home, a proper Cape Coast home, the first question they will ask you is somebody chasing you? Should we hide you? They may know there is nothing going on, but it is something that has been passed on. You see, is somebody chasing you? Should we hide you?
What does it sound like in Cree?
Obi bita wana yemfa unsie. Is somebody chasing you? Yeah. And that may be in the context of someone who has been to church and is coming home to visit you and say hello, but that's what you say.
We'll continue our conversation with the writer and teacher, Kwadwo Opoku Ajumong, en route tomorrow to the farming village of his boyhood, and we'll meet his mother, sister, and brother, and engage with the chiefs and elders of a contemporary Ghanaian town on the poetry of life in their world and ours. Ben Mandelkern edited this conversation with Kwadwo Opoku Ajumong, whose essays and poems are collected in the paperbound Cape Coast Castle. Feedback on slavery, history, redemption, and whatever else moves you at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thank you for joining the conversation.